Are you a rebel seeking transformation in your recovery journey? Then 366 fucking days sober is the book for you. 366 daily meditations. This book by the SoberPod Recovery Podcast host and professional rebel, Carr, will help guide you towards a new way of thinking and living. Each daily meditation offers a fresh perspective, practical advice, and a healthy dose of Carl's irreverent humor to help you stay sober and embrace the challenges of life without drinking, drugging, or shitting your pants. Whether you're just starting your recovery journey or looking for a daily dose of encouragement and laughs, 366 fucking days sober is the book for you. So, if you're ready to transform your life and become the rebel you were meant to be, get your copy of 366 fucking days sober today. Available today on Amazon.com.
Worry works.
I'm Carl. I'm an addict, alcoholic. I'm a German Shepherd dog. And my sobriety date is August 22nd, 2014.
I'm Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is February 19th, 2015. This is SoberPod.
SoberPod.com. 366 fucking days sober. Yeah. Sober Pod, keep it authentic, no facades. If it's real, then you know it's ours. Welcome.
Sober Pod is a podcast dedicated to the idea that one addict or alcoholic helping another is crucial to building a life in recovery. Join us on this season as we read from our book, 366 Fucking Days Sober. And as always, stay active, stay sober.
Also affectionately known as Effing Days Sober.
Effing
Days Sober. Chelsea, how was your week?
It was good. It was good.
Did you have to get any devices placed in your vagina?
No.
a device-free vagina week is really what we're hoping for.
You know, that's all we can ask for, those of us with vaginas. I don't know. Some people might be into devices in their vaginas, though.
Depends on what kind of device we're talking about. Is there batteries located in the device?
They vibrate?
Yeah. So how about blood? Have you made it without any blood drawn from your body this week?
Yes, actually, I have. It's been splendid.
These are some things to be grateful for, because really, like, when you're pregnant, y'all, it's like it becomes a series of prenatal vitamins and pre-pregnancy care, or not pre-birth care, whatever the hell you call it. So prenatal, right?
Prenatal.
Yeah, prenatal care. Yeah, it becomes a series of prenatal care, right? Like, everything kind of involves some sort of doctor's appointment at some point. And So if you can get a week free of that shit, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing all right. But the pants are feeling a little tighter. The shirts are not fitting quite right. And I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
Hey, it's almost like you're drunk again.
I know.
So yeah, I was just talking to a friend, and we were talking about the podcast. He listens to the podcast, and I was saying, yeah, I go, Chelsea, yeah, she's gonna get real tired. She's getting real tired. And he's like, yeah, because she's building a kidney, you know, that kind of thing. Like you said, that's just funny. So I'm like, so you're probably up to a pancreas or a lung at this point. So you're starting to fill out. All right, Chelsea. Anybody you're thankful for this week? Anybody?
I'm thankful for my uncle, who has now passed on. Just thinking about him a lot and his service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His service to the recovery community was unmatched. So grateful for him. What about you?
I had an old client call me yesterday. I post on Instagram 100 days of gratitude, so hashtag 100 days of gratitude, and I've been doing that. It's like day 26 right now, And I don't know if I'm coming up in his algorithm, because again, it's gratitude or whatever, but he just like gave me a call yesterday about, you know, potentially giving me work or sharing my resume and that kind of stuff. And it was, I haven't talked to him in like 3 years. And you know, sure enough, like that's the kind of stuff. It's like, it just reminds me to like kind of hold the course. Don't get depressed. Don't get sad. You know, when somebody makes that call, it's like, it means something, right? Like right. After 3 years, and then he gave me these compliments, like, which is just unbelievable. Again, very talented, da, da, da. But he also said the same things that most everybody has been saying to me in like the last 4 or 5 years, which is like, dude, you're like, you're a really positive person. Like you really, like you leave an impression on people, and it was wonderful basically working with you, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And I'm just like, I can't hear any of that stuff, right?
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah,
it's hard to hear. But let me just say, like, I'm really trying to let that sink in. I actually did do the things that you're supposed to do in that situation. Thank you very much. Even though, like, in mm-hmm. my mind, I am like, what does he want from me?
Yeah.
So, just again, not true. He doesn't really want anything from me. So, yeah, it was a pretty cool call. So I was really thankful for that. All right, Chelsea. We are reading from our book, 366 Effing Days Sober, and it is available. If you go to soberpod.com, you'll get 366 meditations, daily meditations. Dude, can I take the time to do like a brief commercial?
Yeah, do it.
No, I don't want to do the actual commercial, but I'm going to read the back of the book. This is, hopefully people will relate to the saying here. It says, this book was written for you. People may have often called you crazy and said you would never get sober. They wrote you off long ago, but here you are still trying to live sober and giving it your best. Sure, you cuss now and then, but your heart is always in the right place, and you know that it really is all about progress, not perfection. This 366, we did not forget leap year. That was this year, by the way. Daily meditation reader will help you remember that sobriety and recovery don't always have to be so damn serious, and that we can feel good and do good simultaneously. 366 fucking days sober includes daily meditations for the rebel seeking transformation in recovery. Look at that.
It's beautiful. A work of art.
Somebody must have worked really hard writing all of this wonderful cut. And the other thing to remember is that this is not written by AI. It's written by a human that actually has experienced sobriety. So what this is like 8 years of culmination of really like trying to like digest and live recovery in how, you know, how I felt, at least, that I was supposed to be doing it. So I took all that stuff and put it all down on paper, you know, to the best of my ability, so that you could, like, I don't know, live these little moments one day at a time. Aw, isn't that fun? So what we do in this podcast, for right now anyway, is we read that book and we read a page out of it. And then Chelsea and I talk about it. I am a 52-year-old man who is sober 9.5 years. Chelsea is now sober 9 years as of, what was it, the 11th? What was it again?
19th of February. 19th.
Mm-hmm. You know, you say it every time, and I still can't remember it. Isn't that terrible?
I have to, like, hear you say it in order for me to remember the date. Like, I
of
can
my
hear,
own or
yeah,
your date?
Yours. Oh, yeah, by, yours. Yeah, okay. I can, like, yeah. I can hear you saying it, but I couldn't tell you the date without, like,
it's so strange. It's like, yeah. So maybe that's just like the selfishness of alcoholics and addicts.
Probably.
Right, so yeah, it probably is. Like, it's all about me after all. And so so what was I going to say? Oh, you're 9 years. And then you're how old again?
33.
I'm 52. Chelsea is a female. I am a male. We identify that way. So my pronouns, he, him, your pronouns are?
She, her.
And this is what we do. So, and again, it's kind of odd that we ended up here to a certain degree. Like, you know, we started out, we had other people on the podcast. We did, you know, so, and then it ended up just like, you know, two little, you know, Indians on a podcast here. So here we are. And we're just like, I guess we're making do with it. I really enjoy it. It's because it's like we have different perspectives coming from very different areas in our lives or times in our lives. And again, you being female, me being male, and then again, you being younger, me being older. It really is a nice, just between two people, very divergent understandings of where they're at in their life and their recovery, even though we have pretty much the same amount of time. Right.
Yeah.
So I just think it's great. I just think that the way that it works is kind of cool. So with that said, Chelsea, what do you want to do now?
I think we should read from this lovely book and then discuss the reading.
As said. As aforementioned. Okay, do you want to read or do you want me to read?
I'll read because I don't like to speak first. So,
oh, got you.
Yeah. So we're going to read March 10th. So March 10th, quote, "We suffer more often in imagination than in reality," end quote. That's by Seneca. These kinds of quotes date back more than 2,000 years, and we are still so fucking dense that it just can't sink in. How true of a statement is this? We know that, after years of research, it is scientifically proven that worrying works. Do you know how we know this? Because almost 99.9% of things we worry about never happen. Think about it. All the things that you worry about never come to pass. So it must work, right? Not really. Sure, there may be a few things that you can point at and say, "I knew that would happen." But in reality, you worried about much more than that one thing, and none of it ever happened. Reflections. How many things or situations are you worried about today? What can you do, if anything, to change the outcome? Daily challenge. Every time you walk into a new room today, stop and smile. If someone is in the room, say hi.
I'm going to be saying hi to like 20 people when I go to a restaurant tonight.
Hi.
I go to a meeting. Hi. Hello, everybody.
Like, Carl is broken.
Hi.
Who broke the Carl?
Hi.
I could never.
You know, what do you mean? You could never like walk into a room and just say hi to a bunch of people?
Yeah.
I totally could.
Oh, I cannot.
I would love everything about that scenario if I actually did it. I would think that it would be the most fucking, like, just, you know, when somebody's acting out like that, there's always one asshole that really just wants to, you know, put you down or shut you down. You know what I mean? I never let that asshole win ever.
Are you, like, outside of the podcast, like in the real world, are you really extroverted or are you introverted?
Oh my God. So, people talk about me as in I have a lot of energy, or I have a way about me, or I don't even know. Like, there's people that do communicate to me like what I am like, which I kind of don't see it. But let me just say this much: I am literally the dude that like that ego was created, or that persona, that mask was created, class clown, and you know those types of things. I used to do it pretty mean. Like when I was before I got sober, but now that I am sober, I think we talked about it once on the podcast. Like I like to, you know, when we both laugh, right? Like that's what I really enjoy now. Like there's nothing more that I enjoy than to make somebody else laugh, period. It's just like one of those things. But when we both are laughing, like I can't get enough of that. So I really do it in more of a less mean-spirited today, really in a matter of inclusion and those types of things. So yeah, I still hold that. But here's the thing. As soon as I get in my car, I am tears of a clown. Like it's like literally like I just fall back into this. I get so much power from those around me. I get, you know, it kind of invigorates me. I love working with general public people. Even though I hate people, I love people all at the same time. What about you? Are you more introverted or extroverted?
I'm definitely introverted. Yeah. I am. But I am really good at pretending to be extroverted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like I can appear confident, and I am confident. But, you know, I'm definitely not going to be the person that's like the life of the party. That's for sure.
Yeah, I can start a party. That's what I really. And again, I enjoy doing it. I enjoy getting people moving. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's something about. I think there's power in it to a certain degree. I think I like the ability to be able to do that. I guess I was actually thinking earlier today about my wife, and I was just like, one of the things I really enjoy about our relationship is that she's hard to make laugh. She is so, because she's also seen everything that I have to offer. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's like, it's just old news to her, right? So when I make her laugh, it's like, it's such a challenge. And I really enjoy like the challenge of that with her.
Yeah.
Because it just is like
yes, I got it.
Because she's so hard to make laugh. So yeah. And, but she's not also like mean about it either. She just like, again, she's just seen it all before. You know, she just kind of, she knows that shtick or whatever. And she's like, yeah, I seen where that one ends. It's not, you know, there's nothing to that, right? Or whatever. And then so I was thinking about today, like how much I really enjoy making her laugh, because it is, it also means that it's really funny, right? Because she's not one of these people that just will give me she won't even give me a courtesy chuckle. You know,
funny Carl.
Okay, so we're here to talk about the worry. So let's get into the worry. In the worrying of the addict or the alcoholic or the obsessive mind. Oh my God, like so. There's more to this stuff. So how many things or situations are you worried about today? What can you do, if anything, to change the outcome? Has a lot to do with serenity prayer at this point. If you can really pay attention to that. Let me see. I'm worried about getting a job. I'm worried about paying the bills, basic stuff, freelance that I have on my table right now, worried about doing that kind of thing. All the basics, right? That's kind of where I'm at. It's like, I'm worried about the basics. And in these situations, it's like, it always reminds me. Like my sponsor, John, and he would say stuff like, because I would just be worried about whatever it was back in the day. And then he would say, great, you have 15 minutes to worry about that thing. And then you can't, you don't get to worry about it anymore today. Like you've done enough. Because ultimately, there are so many, and he would especially be telling me that when it was something that was beyond my control. Right. So I would, and it just seems kind of funny at times that, hey, yeah, Carl, you can worry about that for 15 minutes, but after that, it's kind of pointless. And I was just like, and I guess there's a certain amount that we have to do for that for ourselves. You know, for me anyway, I know that I have to take in those thoughts. I have to entertain them, but it's really about how much do I hold on to those things? How much do I worry? Like, what can I really do about it is the question. And that's why it's always like, when it comes to this stuff, it, especially about getting a job or paying bills and, you know, and this kind of thing, like the best that you can do is like write down, like, you know, what your next steps are. What are your assets? Like, what do you, or priorities, right? And you just kind of have to go from there. There really is no like magic button, and there is no like, there's no robbing a bank either. So you gotta like, you gotta do it. You're pretty much, you're powerless, and you really gotta go about it at that rate. Very different sometimes for me. Chelsea, what are you currently worrying about?
Oh my goodness.
Today.
Well, I'll tell you one that was like kind of rational, kind of irrational.
Well, I like the irrational one.
It's going to sound crazy, but so earlier this week, my dog, for whatever reason, our house is set up like we've got a back deck, and it's also the main floor. Anyway, so the door that leads to the back deck somehow blew open with like the wind or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I had been sleeping in the basement and didn't know that this happened. And my dog, who is blind, went out side and found this little crack in our deck and fell off the deck. Oh. She's okay. But, you know, I was completely like, I had no idea any of this had occurred. And my husband came home and found her outside.
Oh.
So like every time I leave my house now, I'm like paranoid that that door is going to blow open no matter what I do. Like,
sure,
we've secured everything as best we can. So that's like, it's kind of rational, kind of irrational, because like we've done literally everything we can to make it not happen, but it's just like that fear.
Yeah.
You know, and just like,
I do know that fear. It's like that. And then you want to lay down rules. Like, so again, when my children are running down the steps, one time they fall. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But from now on, nobody can ever run down the steps ever again.
No.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's like it's an irrational thing. Right.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, but again, yeah, it's like safety and all that stuff. But you just sometimes we go overboard with our reactions to those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
So I mean, like that's one that like I'll just be randomly like, I was at the grocery store earlier today and I was like, oh, my God, what if she's like fallen off the deck again. Like I really need to run home. And it's like, no, like I can't stop everything I'm doing because of this irrational
fear. Have you put up cameras on the deck yet? Is really what I want to know.
We haven't. We have one, but with like the weather, it's been kind of
how about sensors and detectors on the deck, the door? Oh, no, I'm just getting you going. But yeah, no, I totally understand that. You know, and let me say you're I've actually experienced my own trauma as it relates to being in the house, and I was, I was 18, 19 years old,
mm-hmm.
and my roommates who I was living with, actually, they owned the house. They were taking care of their sister's dog, and they had built like a little dog pen, but it wasn't high enough to the dog could jump over. Right. So, but what they did is they tied a leash to the door.
Oh no!
Yeah, you hear it coming.
No.
Yeah. And keep in mind, I'm methed out of my fucking gourd anyway, most of the time. And so I'm sleeping well until 2-3, you know, in the afternoon. But yeah, the dog had jumped and then hung himself as it jumped over the fence with the short leash, because the leash was just long enough to make it over the fence, but not long enough to go all the way.
Mm.
And so I guess the animal control was called, and there was a knock on the door. They were both at work, and I'm answering the door, and you know, they're telling me that I should like, you know, get the dog down. And I am like, what are you talking about? Like, I have no clue what's going on, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I had to answer. So that was a little traumatic for me. So when dogs are like alone like that, and that kind of stuff, I know what can happen, mm-hmm. and it's scary stuff. It really is. It's really scary. So I'm sorry that you had that. That is like a little trauma, because again, your dog is blind too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not like it, you know, it just makes it even worse, mm-hmm. you know, and older too, right?
Yeah, so, she's got dementia.
Yeah. So that's just super sad. So I understand your concern, but you're right. It's like, at what point do we stop obsessing and double checking the doorknobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like what time, where do we, we've done our part the best that we can. But then sometimes our brain goes beyond that. And I totally understand that, where that comes from. It's just a point of trauma. Dude, that's like a lot of trauma. I don't know. I mean, to a certain degree, I think you're allowed for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I think if it like was going on, you know, for months and months, like the same scenario, like that'd be something to address in therapy for sure. But, you know, like, That's just like one that was in the forefront of my mind, because I literally had that fear today, and I'm in the grocery store and I'm telling myself like, no, it's okay. You can finish getting what you're getting, because whether you get home now or you get home in 10 minutes, like it's not going to be, you know, like it's going to be okay. Like there's not going to be a dog that got out, you know? So just having to like talk myself through it. But, you know,
if you didn't worry, all these things would happen. Right. So
right.
worrying totally works.
Prevents all the things from happening.
Exactly. So, I kind of do the same thing with the job thing that you're doing a little bit, is to start like talking myself down, remembering like, yeah, you know, hey, this is not the end. You know, it's like, you know, there are definitely more things that would have to happen in order for it to be like really bad. You know, my wife also losing her job, not getting freelance, not getting other additional income, you know, all these other types of things. I did have a lot of issue with unemployment and that kind of stuff. Like I still haven't gotten a stitch of unemployment because again, I had troubles with the filing and blah, blah, blah. And so, one of the things that I do though, is I just kind of go, all right, Carl, like this isn't happening to that, you know, it's not at that stage yet. Right. So just keep doing what you're doing. Keep applying for jobs. Keep moving forward. Keep doing that stuff, you know. And that's the hardest part sometimes. It's like when worry gets to a point where you give up. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where I've been like, oh, like I need to keep like not worrying and try to focus on more of like what I'm capable of doing. Right. The wisdom to know the difference, like what I can and cannot change. And then the wisdom to know the difference, meaning like what I keep praying for is that like, hey, Carl, like, you know that you can do better. So go do that. Right. Whatever it is. And sometimes I am just like, worry will put me in a state of paralysis where it's like, I don't want to do anything because I've spent all my energy worrying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, yeah. So worry to a certain degree can like really just, you know, it could just mess with you really a lot. And when, not that, you know, I worry about it a couple days or, you know, 2 or 3 days, that I'm worrying about it. This is like months on end now, you know, and that's where you like have to realize that, like, you know, you got to give things away. You cannot continue to live with that kind of an energy. It will defeat you. So one of the things that I've been doing is making sure I'm like trying to go for a walk, step away from the computer, or basically what I call my hunter gatherer mode when I'm trying to look for jobs and I'm just like click 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 click. Mm-hmm. Yeah, try any job will do. Any job will do. Just get, you know, in that panic and worry mode. And so I've been trying to step away. My suggestion for my sponsor has been to like, hey, go to the club, go to meetings. I've been going like almost every day from like, you know, like the last 2 weeks now, just to try and like get out of my own head, get away from my computer, get away from this environment, and, you know, and get involved with other people, talking to sponsees, doing step work with them, making sure that I'm like being more active in that way. Because again, it takes me out of myself when I'm helping somebody else and all the worry that's going on in my head. And then when I'm talking to some of these dudes, I'm like, whoa, I'm like, I'm really glad I'm just unemployed.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know if I want that problem or not, you know. Mm-hmm. So so it's been kind of an eye opener again, being unemployed, which is, you know, usually is, you know, for me anyway. All right, Chelsea, what do you think about the daily challenge? Like every time you walk into a new room today, who are you going to say hi to? Or do you work today?
Absolutely no one. Yeah, I work tonight. I will say, if I'm like walking into a room or I'm walking by someone, I will smile at them. I'm not going to be like, hey, how's it going? But I will smile at them, at least to acknowledge that they are a human being and I'm not so focused on myself, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I can commit to like a soft smile, but definitely not a hi.
You don't want to go for a hi?
Nope.
I mean, it has it in here in quotations. Hi. At the very end. Hi.
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 I don't think I could do it.
Okay. So I think, you know, one of the things I've been noticing is it's really hard to achieve these challenges sometimes.
Like, yeah, way to set us up for failure, Carl.
Here's one. Here's one that's really hard. It's on March 12th. Dude, we should just read the challenges just for people. So, like, if you're new here, this will probably launch tomorrow, right? So tomorrow's is pay attention to the next time you hear your inner voice calling you to do something, send yourself a text and put it on your to-do list. That's not a hard thing, right?
Yeah.
Again, so there's every time you walk into a room, and then there's tell five people you are close. Tell people you are close to about your cause. Ask if they can help you do it. What? Dude, that's asking for help and shit. That would be hard. do someone else's chores today. Make the day just a little bit easier for someone somehow. And that could be at work too, by the way, not just home. And let's just see. Look, is it all not working? Try something different. That's an easy challenge, isn't it? Not always. Make a positive comment on someone's post today. Be sincere. Oh, geez, that's hard to do too. So yeah, I find that some of these challenges are a little you got to be like in the right mindset to carry it through the whole day to find the opportunities to do those things. So yeah, it can be a little hard to say hi to people, Chelsea.
It is hard. I don't want to be like witnessed. I don't want anyone to know where I am. Just pretend I'm not here. That's how I
do not exist, even though I wish dearly that I could exist.
Yes.
So then tell me something as we go back to the to March 10th and worrying. What were some of the things you used to worry about that were like one of your main worries or concerns when you were drinking?
Running out. Not having
what, alcohol?
Alcohol, yeah. not having enough, or you know, having to go somewhere that did not have alcohol for me to consume, you know. As
so your
as
daily
is.
Life, like you're like, so you weren't worried about getting pregnant, right? Like you are right now. You literally, like, your memory is that, like, oh yeah, one of my greatest worries was running out of alcohol or drugs.
Okay, let me just preface this. Well, let me. This reminds me, there are certain antibiotics that, if you take them with alcohol, they put you at a higher risk for pregnancy.
Oh,
and
no wonder my wife has so many kids. God damn it!
At one point, I had to take this antibiotic. I wasn't gonna stop drinking, so I was like, well, guess we just can't do it for a few days.
So you would rather go without sex than go without
alcohol. Yeah.
Alcohol. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. There's a certain amount of like, I worried all the time. That's what drove me, actually. Like, mm-hmm. That's like, there was nothing. So whether it be about, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that, like, all I was driven by fear and worry. I didn't know that,
mm-hmm.
You know, isn't that weird that you don't know that? You can, like, that could be like one of your main motivators of your life, but you don't know that that's one of your main motivators.
No, it's just your way of being.
Yeah.
At that
yeah.
point.
Yeah. So yeah, when I was sober, it's like, in ACA, they call it addicted to excitement. That's what they call it. It's like in one of their traits, like to be raised in a alcoholic or dysfunctional home, you are kind of predisposed to be addicted to excitement. And the reason that they call it excitement is because they kind of admit that nobody would say that they were addicted to fear, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, you know, I think about fear and worry as, you know, pretty much, you know, sister emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, like, that's what powered me, man. Like fear of not, you know, getting something, you know, that I want, fear of losing something that I have. You know, and that could be money, sex, alcohol, you know, property, prestige, you know, all these other different things, you know, and I had no understanding. And so, you know, that's why I really identify with the quote for this reading is, like, you know, from Seneca, that says, you know, we suffer often in imagination, more often in imagination than in reality, because in my reality, dude, I mean, if I really step back and look at it, dude, I'm just I live in a bedroom community. I have a regular job like everybody else. You know, I got a family, and in all respects, I should have been really happy, You know, because my reality, it didn't match how I felt. It really didn't. So It's like I was living in this like everything is this emergency or tragedy or trauma or fear and worry. And then like I'm responding to all these things that don't exist because it's really my imagination that had created all this stuff. And it's just so, you know, when people talk about denial, that for me was like, it epitomized my level of thinking in denial because I'm literally, you know, I don't know if I've worked myself into thinking I'm more important than I am or, you know what I mean? Like I had no, I look at it today, I go like, who was that dude?
So, yeah.
And the weirdest part, I guess if there's any like, if there's any reason to like kind of push sobriety here, it's because like, you don't know that you don't know, you know, you don't know how you think that way until your head pops out of your ass. And my head came out of my ass about 5 years sober, you know, and I didn't realize like, oh my gosh, that's how I was thinking and responding to my life, which is a complete, you know, made up scenario that didn't exist, you know? So crazy. Did you ever feel like that? Did you ever feel like, you know, the life you lead today it was completely unfathomable before you got sober. Do you know what I'm saying?
And
it's like your inner thought life too, not just the one that's on the outside, but the inner thought. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
You know, that voice that talks to you every day.
Well, I mean, because I never thought I'd want a life like this, you know, a life without drinking, a life that wasn't exciting. You know what I mean?
Addicted to fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll start there. But it's so interesting. The addicted to excitement fear thing. I'm kind of going back and forth and like kind of who I was in my childhood and getting a little bit older and how that makes a lot of sense in my life too. But anyway, I don't think I feel like I'm a lot like you in that I didn't know that my way of thinking or being just was that of an anxious person that was driven by fear. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that was just who I was. And I think I used alcohol as a way to quiet the noise, to kind of stop my worrying, because alcohol made me forget, even if it was just temporarily.
Or even if it was just Tuesday.
Yeah. So, you know, alcohol, that's why I think I was so like hyper focused on alcohol and not like, if I wasn't at work, you know, if I was somewhere where it'd be acceptable to drink, such as my home or a party or restaurant, whatever, if there wasn't alcohol there, you know, that would cause me a lot of distress. And to be quite honest, I just wouldn't go. I would say, well, why would I do this when I can stay home and get drunk? I think there's something to be said about being the oldest child in your family and kind of some of the responsibility that comes with that. So I had that going on, and then I had, you know, just I was grown up trying to figure out what the fuck to do with my life and just trying to make it through, and already being an anxious person driven by fear. It's no wonder that me and alcohol became BFFs. Like, like I needed something to soothe me, because I could not figure out how to do it in a healthy manner. And I couldn't figure out how to stop the worrying all the time. And, you know, it was a little bit more extreme, I think, in my case, because I have been diagnosed with OCD. And so some of the obsessions and the compulsions, like is related to anxiety and fear and worrying and just like irrational thoughts, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, I mean, that's not really a good example of an irrational thought because it's something that happened with my dog, but you know, something.
There's a level to it, but it's not as bad as some other things.
Yeah, but here's an example. Another example is like, because my house is a complete disaster right now, the irrational thought and the fear in me is like, oh, my husband's going to leave me because my house is so dirty. Like, it needs to be cleaned so bad.
He would leave you over that? What a fucking jerk.
No, he absolutely wouldn't. But that's, you know, that's the crazy thinking. So it's no wonder, like, me and alcohol, it was like meant to be. And I cared very much whether or not I had enough alcohol going forward. So.
Yeah, no, it's because I was even saying to a dude the other night, like the when people would talk about drinking or their heavy drinking, or they would talk about like, yeah, I drink a lot, but I'm not an alcoholic. You know, people justifying their behaviors.
I did it,
and I would say, yeah, me too. I drink medicinally. that's how I justified it. Again, I really did drink medicinally to a certain degree. Oh, I mean,
yeah.
It's also known as chronic alcoholism, but I also drank medicinally. So yeah, I did the same thing. Like it did what it did for me, what, you know, medication would do. Right. You know, so, and I think, you know, sitting here listening to ourselves, I'm like, oh yeah, this is like, you know, what I really loved is that we talked about the solution first and then we talked about the problem. But, you know, because when we were drinking, you know, I think we're both very similar in that, like, you know, we had this overwhelming sense of worry. We extended it for a period of time until we couldn't. And then, of course, that's where the obsession comes in to drink, because we need to quiet that voice like that. Mm-hmm. Though we may be driven by fear and worry and all those types of things, the fact is you can only do it for so long before you have to quiet it down. And then the only way to do that is through alcohol. And then, of course, you know, at some point you cross the line, you continue to do those things, and then it becomes like, this is just something that I do now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then so, but what we talked about at the beginning of the episode, if you all want to go back and rewind, we talked about ways in which we try to soothe ourselves in order to like get out of worry. And we talked about that basically, like, one of the things is like, I mean, yeah, we worry, but we also temper it with thinking it through. What is the reality of those situations? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a real difference there too. So, sorry, my dogs are barking.
That's
my dogs are barking. And I don't mean that my feet are hot. Such a dad joke.
That I like to do, like, and it sounds kind of like hokey, like it probably, you know, wouldn't work, but for me it does, you know, like just breathing in for like 4 counts and then out for 6 counts or whatever. And just, I don't know the exact amount, but just there's a breath.
A box breathing is what it's called. Like you breathe in for 4 seconds, you hold it for another 4 seconds, and then you breathe out for 4 seconds and you let that sit for 4 seconds and you breathe in again. So that box breathing is a way to regulate your system a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it talk about the things that you can and cannot control. One of the things you can control is your breathing. Mm-hmm. And when you breathe like that, it signals to the rest of your body like, oh, hey, party people, all the other organs.
We're going to chill out.
Yeah, we're going to chill. Because that's, you know, how you get. Because when you're anxious or worried or you're like going out of control, you'll you breathe shallow and shorter breaths and those types of things. Mm-hmm. So that box breathing will help to try and regulate those types of things. Yeah, one of the things that has worked for me, especially in early sobriety, was the Serenity Prayer. And I would literally say it like over and over, but I would like pick it apart as I said it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, God, and then I would say, so every word, like if it's God, you know, and I would be like, okay, that higher power, group of drunks, I mean, you name it. Like I would just go through like all the other like definitions around it, grant, and I'd be like, okay, grant, give me, allow me, please let me have, you know, all these things. I would just like go through all the whole prayer that way, and it would just literally like help me to understand what it was that I was, what I was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I'm just looking for what I can and cannot control, and what I can act on, right? What is my responsibility? And dude, yeah, in early sobriety, I just gritted my teeth all the time, said that shit all the time. It was just like, you know, anytime somebody was being an asshole or a dick, or you know, I was worried about losing my job.
God, grant me the serenity to accept.
it's like I feared like losing my job, right? Just like you fear like, you know, your husband leaving you. It's like, it's irrational as fuck. It really is. You're like, why do I think that way? Just because I made one mistake doesn't mean that I'm going to, you know, lose my job. Like I have the opportunity to repair it, you know, but mm-hmm. I don't, in those moments, I really don't see it. So worry becomes something that, again, I use as a motivation to actually not ever make a mistake again. Right. Which is impossible to do. It's impossible. So, you know, you can do that, or you can try to come to more of a term of acceptance and really move more towards like you're an imperfect being, and you're allowed to act that way. You're allowed to make mistakes. You're allowed to do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because we're human after all, aren't we? Wait a minute. I don't know. I haven't met you in person. Maybe you're not.
I'm a human, Carl.
You have one of those little aliens growing inside of you. So
that's,
I don't know.
That's true.
We're waiting to get out. Okay, Chelsea. I think that wraps us up. I think we have met our service obligation for the week. Our karma points are definitely rising. Maybe not as into the thousands yet, but our karma points are definitely secured this week. So Chelsea, is there anything that you would like to say to the kind people about worrying and how it works?
How it works. Worrying does not solve anything, you know, other than it preoccupies you. You know, that's really all it's good for is preoccupying you, and typically not in a good way. So I like kind of how your sponsor handled it, Carl. It was like, okay, you get 15 minutes and then we're moving on. You know, if it's something that you can change, obviously do something, you know, with that, you know, use your own power if you can. But if it's not, if it's something that you just have to accept and, you know, acknowledge and let go, then that's what you got to do, because you can't spend your entire life worrying about all the little shit. Because mm-hmm. then it doesn't give you any space to appreciate the goodness that's in your life if you're always thinking about the what ifs and what's going to go wrong.
That was about you. Very similar to say, I would only add to that and say that, you know, as remember that your worry really takes away from how effective you can be, because mm-hmm. You only have so much energy. You only have so much fuel to approach your real problems. So yeah, worry about it for 15 minutes, but don't forget that at that point you need to like make some decisions about what it is that you need to do. One of the things that has worked for me, and I even have it, you know, I have one of those Cricut machines that you can print vinyl, you know, print mm-hmm. vinyl lettering, and I have on the bezel of my monitor, it says do the next indicated step. So when I fall into worry, or I fall into like, again, I'm just, you know, catastrophizing or whatever, you know, the one thing I do is I look down on that printed, you know, vinyl on my monitor that says, do the next indicated step. And it just reminds me that there's like, I've worried for 15 minutes. Great. But now is the time for action. So I look at those things and say, all right, what is the next indicated step? I ask myself that all the time. What do I need to do at this point? So it could be a lengthy thing that needs to be done, many, many, you know, parts of a process, but I just got to go, okay, what's the next thing? Mm-hmm. And that's all there is to it for most of the time. It could be that simple. It doesn't have to be, you know, all up in your head all the time. It could literally be, you know, and if you're not doing the next indicated step away, you know, take some time to relax, you know, gather yourself, go for a walk, do the box breathing, do all these other things. There's tools out there. You just really do have to find the one that works for you. Try them all, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, for a lot of people, it's exercising every day and eating right and sleeping well. We talked about that in the past. But for others, it's like they need to meditate, or they need to like, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to talk about masturbation because I do that. but that's the idea. Whatever works for you, you have to find it. There are many tools out there that'll help you do that. You know, we talk about, recovery is one thing, but the mental health practice. So there could be, there's apps out there. Again, there's like BetterHelp. They're not our sponsor. We're not doing that or anything, but there's BetterHelp. There's like other counseling and therapy apps out there that can really kind of reach out. So if you're in a state of worry and you find that you're doing nothing but kind of chewing on those same things, the best thing I ever did was I told somebody else for the first time.
Mm-hmm, you know, absolutely.
Like, hey, this is what, you know, this is worrying me. And most of the time, you know, within 10 minutes of a conversation, like the worry is gone. It's like, what do they say? Like, you know, a problem shared is half solved or something like that. You know, it's kind of how it goes. All right, Chelsea, we're done. Our karma is up. I would like to thank everybody for buying the book. Again, we get a dollar. We get a $1.85.
$1.85.
Actually, it's $1.80. We get $1.80. For every book that we sell, and those funds are used to support the podcast. So by all means, buy the book, support the podcast. And if you have people with, sobriety days coming up, it makes a great gift because sobriety medallions are like $18 to $20.
You can
give them this gift of knowledge for $12.22 from Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, you got no shipping. You got, you know, come on, you know, you can easily do that. And I'd like to thank V for her SOS Saturday meetings. And so if you are interested in attending Sober Pod's official meeting, it's on Saturdays at, is it 6:30 or 6? I forget.
6 o'clock.
Oh my God. Okay.
We'll
somebody
have to ask me.
Somebody go to our website, soberpod.com, and look up the meeting and see what time it is. So and then let us know what time our own meeting is. I believe it's 6 p.m.
<That's>
6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And then of course that's 9 p.m. Eastern. And then again, thank you to Friends in Recovery for always singing our praises and for bringing up the book and for sharing our stuff. We really appreciate it. And then, of course, for Chelsea for being such a great ass podcast host and tired person that I always bug to do this stuff. Because I feel like now that you're like working and pregnant and like living a life, I feel like I'm just like bugging you. Like, Chelsea, you want to record today?
No, I'm grateful for you, Carl, and all the hard work you do for the podcast. And, you know, even though you're not working right now, I know that like you have, you know, children, a wife, doggos. And this is still like, it's like another job you have to take on, even though it's a hobby. So
yeah,
thank you.
No, thank you. All right, so what do we say to the kind, wonderful people?
I say deuces.
And I say stay active, stay sober, call your mother.
Motherfucker.
Hey, wait, whoa. All
right. Soberpod.com. 366 fucking days sober. Yeah. It was a sight to see them. Yeah. Breakfast was Sprite and Seagrams. Wrestling with my vices, exercising my demons. My blessings were blocked, so I never got the message. I'm stressing, I'm only 12 steps from an exit. Damn. Regret it, because my imperfections were perfected. I ain't run from it, I accept it and rep it. It's a badge to me. Good stories come from a tragedy. And when you survive, the glory will come in Act 3. The wait's over. 366 fucking days sober. Morning affirmations that can start the day for you. Use my favorite book. Bookmark for a placeholder. Finish when the day's over. Okay. 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 Yeah. Sober pod. Keep it authentic. No facades. If it's real, then you know it's ours. Welcome.
Welcome. Are you a rebel seeking transformation in your recovery journey? Then 366 fucking days sober is the book for you. 366 daily meditations, This book by the SoberPod Recovery Podcast host and professional rebel, Carr, will help guide you towards a new way of thinking and living. Each daily meditation offers a fresh perspective, practical advice, and a healthy dose of Carl's irreverent humor to help you stay sober and embrace the challenges of life without drinking, drugging, or shitting your pants. Whether you're just starting your recovery journey or looking for a daily dose of encouragement and laughs, 366 fucking days sober is the book for you. So, if you're ready to transform your life and become the rebel you were meant to be, get your copy of 366 fucking days sober today. Available today on Amazon.com.